Welcome, friends. Welcome back to ArtCast. I'm your host, Ron Jacobs, coming to you with yet another recording from the Architecture Insight Conference. I got a slew of these. I'm telling you, they had me so busy. And this time we're talking with Colin Bird from Conchango, where he was giving a talk at the conference called An Agile World. It's an agile world. Kind of reminds me of that. It's a small world after all. Maybe we should do, it's an agile world after all. No, no, don't sing that song because it gets in your head and it never goes away. If you've never been to Disneyland where they have a small world ride, don't go. Trust me. You don't want to see this. But you do want to listen today as Colin gives us the scoop on how does agile development and agile architecture work together. Let's give it up for Colin Bird.
I'm joined today by Colin Bird from Conchango. Did I say that right, Conchango?
You did, Ron. Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Colin, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Okay, I'm the CTO for Conchango. I've been there since 1991, and I've been involved in all sorts of architecture stuff. We've been building large internet e-commerce systems, large internet applications. We've worked on CRM systems, integration systems, business intelligence. So as a CTO, I kind of get involved in an awful lot of different stuff. And over the last few years, we've been really getting into the agile software development lifecycle and become a bit of an expert in that area.
Yeah, so that's real interesting. And I've been kind of fascinated by agile because to some people, it seems like agile is sort of anti-architecture almost. Mm-hmm. It's like to hear them talk about it, it's like, we don't really know what we're going to build, but we'll just get together and kind of iterate on things until something emerges, and hopefully it will be the thing we want. And I think that kind of talk makes many architects nervous.
I'd agree. I think it goes not just architecture, but I think development. I think it's viewed as a lack of rigor. It's viewed as perhaps I walk in with my 10-gallon hat and say, hey, he's agile. So it's not that serious. It's quite the reverse. Architecture and good architects are absolutely key. If you think about evolving an architecture in an iterative fashion, that takes a lot of skill, getting the balance between the long-term, identifying the costs of integration points that are going to be difficult to change once you've kind of put them in cement, through to actually breaking off functionality in vertical slices and delivering real business benefit every iteration. That takes real skill. It also takes real engineering practices, really good developers. I was reading a comment. I know we're going to talk to Eva Jacobson later on, but he made a comment in one of his postcards about agile requiring really good developers. Well, I'd agree. That's true. However, I don't see that any other methodology is going to allow you to build great software with less than great developers and architects.
So I want the methodology that works with lousy developers.
Yeah, I'll have some of that, please.
They're in such abundant supply.
Completely, yeah. I mean, we've seen so many of them out there, so successful.
Yeah, I agree. I think I was thinking about this actually on the flight over here because I've been pondering this relationship between sort of the exploratory nature of Agile and architecture. And I agree with you. It seemed to me that if you had a sense of the architecture, you really have to have this before you start dreaming up how you're going to explore through an iteration the right way to do something. And Peter Provost is a colleague of mine at Microsoft. He works on the patterns and practices team, and he's a big agile developer type guy. I love working with Peter. And he talks to hear him talk about it, he says the code talks to him. And it kind of tells him if it's good or bad, if it smells, things like that. But I think, what he's saying is that he's going through this iterative process to discover the lower level details, like the right factoring of the object model and those sorts of things. But those are a level of detail, I think, that lives below the architecture. I mean, the architecture is not prescriptive about what the object model has to look like, is it?
It can. It depends on the solution. As a consultant's answer, if ever I heard one.
Yeah.
But it is going to depend on what level you drill down to. So clearly, when you start a project, I mean, even if you were doing the thing waterfall, your idea of the architecture is going to be much higher level. And as you build down and drill into some of the concepts and actually look at implementation, you're going to get much more detailed. So I think there's this balance. And one of the challenges with agile architecture is how deep you go, how soon. Yeah. So you need to have enough knowledge about the kind of scope of the architecture to get something the right shape. So if you imagine something that does build completely organically with no thought for the end game, you're going to get bits stuck on randomly. You're going to get no reuse. The code's going to smell big style. Yeah, it's going to be an awful lot more code than you should have. So you can't do that. You can't just have no idea about where you're going. You need a direction. And you need, if you like, a vision. And the vision of the architecture will evolve. So one of the things is, if you actually look at the life cycle of an application, its complete life cycle, not just building the thing and putting it into production initially, it's going to live for 2, 3, 10 years maybe. The cost of the application, I think there's a stat about 70 to 80% of the cost and time spent actually modifying that code will be done after it initially goes into production. So your architecture is always going to have to evolve. Yeah, so if I put an application in release one, by the time it gets to release five, it's three times bigger. Well, that application, and you can see this, where people have put applications into production and badly maintained them and just added bits on, you do end up with spaghetti, you end up with extremely smelly code, and eventually that has to be completely wiped clean and eroded. So coming back to the point about good architecture, it needs to be employed all the way through the process, not just at the beginning, but all the way through, even after it's been put into production. And so what you get with Agile is an evolving architecture. And there's a process of refactoring, not just at the code level, and maybe breaking out a few objects to make something slightly neater, but actually right back at the bigger picture. You continually evolve that architecture as you understand more about the problem space, as your business customers understand more about their problem space, and also as business events change around you. So if you have an 18-month project, the business at the start of the 18-month is going to be entirely different to the business at the end of the 18-month. If you don't have a process of agile architecture and continually evolving that architecture, you're going to start with a plan, stick to it because that was your plan, and deliver something that doesn't actually fit the business, and actually once it's gone into production, will be fairly static and very hard to actually change in an efficient style.
You know, it's funny that you talk about the business changing over 18 months, because I remember when I started my career as a software engineer in the late 80s, it was very common for me to hear people talk about systems that, we're going to build this system that will be in use for the next 15 years, and we're going to build some software that everybody here will use. It will just stay the same, and we're going to do that. And now that's almost unheard of. That we can't even imagine anything staying the same for 15 years. And I think this is as part of the push towards agile, isn't it? Because we were taught the waterfall method as a way of saying, well, if something was that static, it was going to stay the same for 15 years, then you could probably perfectly understand the requirements before you built anything. And so you would go through a nice waterfall cycle where you would understand all the requirements and then go build it. But then the reality of this fast-moving world we live in kind of caught up with that. So I think Agile was sort of a reaction against saying, we can't perfectly understand the requirements up front.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think there's a number of reasons why Agile's pitched up. A, because businesses aren't staying the same. And I think that the rate of change, particularly with the internet connectivity, the way people are doing business. I mean, if you look at the way Amazon will operate now, they have changed the way people work and people are sticking to one aspect of their core business, but actually they might use Amazon services to deliver another part of it. So businesses have completely changed the way they actually work. But I think another thing is it's kind of a reaction to this deterministic style of we can figure out all the requirements up front. And I think we've tried and tried and tried. We've failed so many times. We are really slow learners. Yeah. So how many times have you heard the developers say, well, the requirements document stinks. Yeah. It's so full of holes. It doesn't describe what we need to build. Yeah. It's always the case. You get a bunch of business users and say, right, guys, we want you to write everything you want in this system. and you make sure you have everything, because once you've got it written down, we're not going to let you change it, because that's just going to cost us too much money.
Sure.
So they scratch their heads and think, right, just think of all this possible stuff that we can have, throw it in. Yeah. And then how well do they define it? Well, they don't, you know, and there's interpretation. This bit here, is it a small bit or is it a large bit? Is it really complex? Well, actually, the developer looks at it and goes, yeah, I can implement that in 10 minutes. But inside the business users guy's head, he's got sort of this vision of this very sophisticated piece of behavior, which might take, you know, 10 years to develop. So interpretation, yeah, the lack of complete understanding at a business level. I mean, one of the classics is you run a business requirements workshop and you get different aspects of the business into the workshop. And you say, all right, guys, okay, we're going to walk through this process. And then three different parts of the business go, hey, no, we don't do it that way. And straight away, you actually have three parts of the business disagreeing with each other as to their business process. So how can you possibly go and just paper over cracks like that? You've got to allow it to evolve, and you've also got to allow it to change. So one of the things about building software is we don't just re-engineer the business and just support the business. What we should be doing is actually more innovative and actually allowing the business to work in different ways. And the business guys do business. They don't understand technology. And so working together, the business and technology people, you can actually move forward, come out with a different business process with a much smarter system. So if you just simply, you know, waterfall, define the requirements at a business level with no input from the technology guys about what might be possible, what other ideas might be there, you actually get a much less exciting system, as well as actually in the end it not really being what the business wants.
Well, this is one of the interesting aspects of Agile, is it's this insistence that the business stay involved in the project. It's not like, tell us what you want, then we'll go away and build it. It's no, you have to stay involved.
And this is one of the key aspects. And I do quite a lot of mentoring. I'll go into a customer's project, and they'll say, well, you know, the business won't talk to us, so we're just building it for them. We're making the decisions for them. Well, how's that going to work? You know, if you haven't got somebody who's frontline business who really understands what the business needs involved with that project, how's it going to build it? Whatever methodology you pick, yeah. If you get them to just, you know, capture all their thoughts in a document, how much of the business process and essence have they actually caught? As we've just discussed, not very much. So unless you have them involved in the project, it's just simply not going to work. So my answer is, okay, if they're not prepared to be involved, how important is the project to them? Probably not that. It's not important enough. And, you know, they have day jobs. Great. So one of the things we do is we say, we understand you've got a day job, which is why we're interested in talking to you, but you come and sit with us for a while. For the next 6 months, you can sit in this team room. Sure, you can carry on with your day job, but you're there. Yeah, quick five-second conversation about this particular feature. And so you've got that connectivity and you've got that feedback. Also, you get the understanding from the business about the challenges you face at an IT level. And so what you do is you break down the barriers. So these are key things, I think, for any process, waterfall or agile, keeping the business close. But yeah, sure, agile insists on it.
Well, in fact, this is where the architect comes in, is a very critical piece, because I can just imagine, you know, the business user in there and the developers are talking some kind of very low-level nonsense to them, you know, and saying, should we do A or B? You know, and the business user says, I have no idea what you're talking about. But you need someone who can sort of bridge that gap between understanding the technical architecture and what the business needs and make it comprehensible.
Yes, this is a good example came up recently. So, we're discussing Ajax with the business. So, yeah, we should use Ajax for this thing. And the business goes, you know, what's Ajax?
Okay. Is that some cleaner?
Yeah, exactly. I use it to clean my bathroom. So around that, actually, no, what we want actually is the buyer's folder to stay constantly updated. Yeah, so all the stuff that I'm bidding on, yeah, I want to see where it's at. Oh, yeah, now I understand that. And so, yeah, the key skill there of an architect is to talk in the business language and to actually then go, yeah, great, but I'm going to implement that with Ajax. Yeah, in the background, I've got a good idea of how we could do that. And actually, I've got some enabling technology that the business guy might not know about. So, again, going back to this example of, you know, the requirements all being done up front, and then the IT guy coming along and implementing them, we might implement a fairly boring page. I hit a button to refresh. But actually, you know, it was, you know, a bit of Atlas implementation on ASP.NET 2. Suddenly I've got something that's actually completely interactive. It's telling me, you know, the constant update on the status of this BIOS folder. It's a different solution that we've got out because we've got the business and technology guys working, collaborating together.
Well, I think the waterfall perspective, which so many of us have been trained in, borrows a lot from the world of buildings, right? So if I were building a skyscraper in London, right, we might go out and we'd hire an architect, we'd have large drawings and scale models built up, we'd have an exact understanding of exactly what that building's going to look like, how big it is, the doors, the parking, everything. We would know it all perfectly before we even began. And then we would start building. And so there would be very distinct phases. And then along comes Agile, where we say, we don't really know what the finished building looks like up front. So Agile says, let's do the smallest useful thing we can do and then see how that works. Is that a fair characterization?
No.
Okay.
let's start with the assumption about a building. So I had an extension done at home.
Yeah.
So we were not even talking a big building here. Yeah, this is a small extension, a couple of extra bedrooms and a new bathroom. And so we had an idea of what it would look like. Yeah, we had some plans. Yeah, we said, right, okay, well, the rooms will be here. It'll be, so big. And got most of the details sort of knocked together. And I would sort of liken this to the vision of what you're trying to build. So we had a good understanding up front of what this thing was going to look like. So not understanding what it's going to look like, I think, is a myth of Agile. You absolutely need a vision of what this thing's for, its purpose, and how it's actually going to sort of hang together.
Okay.
Maybe not down into the detail. So did we know what kind of doors we were going to have and what kind of trim and, was this ceiling going to be Artex and what kind of light fittings? No. Yeah. So when the builders actually came and did this, they then discovered all sorts of problems. So they went to dig the foundations and found a drain there. We didn't know that up front. We couldn't possibly. We could have spent months trying to de-risk the project and still found the drain there only when we started building. So this is, by actually starting the thing, you get much more information back. And so this myth of actually we can get all the requirements up front, and they have to be nailed down in detail, is absolutely wrong. So however long you spend, there's still going to be stuff you discover. And the building analogy works so far, I think, with technology. Clearly, with technology, it moves a lot faster than the building does. We might suddenly decide we're going to have this complete new feature here, whereas if I build a skyscraper, I won't suddenly decide, well, actually, I'm going to have 16 extra floors.
Okay.
Perhaps you would, but it's not going to work very well, is it?
Yeah. Well, but on the other hand, I've seen many projects where, the developers spent the first 6 or 9 months building low-level pieces of foundation, and then the business says, all right, it's been 6 months. What do you have to show us? And they say, well, nothing really yet. But it's getting well. Pretty soon we'll start making really good progress here. And Agile is sort of a reaction against that, isn't it?
It very much is. Again, you have to be balanced about it, because sometimes you do need what I call plumbing. You do need that infrastructure in many cases to actually enable some of the business functions. So the trick, again, this comes back to how skilled does the architect need to be? Well, you need to look at things in vertical slices of vertical business functionality that draw right down through to the plumbing. And this is where you need to get that balance. So sometimes what you'll find is if you've got a very large sort of enterprise project with lots of application teams and maybe an infrastructure team, you've got the infrastructure team who are building infrastructure for their customers, who are actually the application teams. Yeah, so you can get this kind of this mix of the plumbing and the application teams. And so actually, if you look at the infrastructure team, they have customers. They just happen to be technical customers. So you can slice these things in many different ways. And I think one of the things, this is one of my big points about any methodology, whether it be RAP, whether it be Scrum, whether it be XP, don't do it blindly. Don't just take a project methodology and do it by numbers, painting by numbers. You have to take the methodology and apply it to the context, the technical skill sets, the team, the organization, and adapt it. So if you've got something which is very large and it's got a lot of infrastructure in it, you can't just not build the infrastructure, and Agile doesn't say that. What you do in Agile, though, is very much root everything back to prioritized business functionality. And if you can't do that, you shouldn't be building it. And so this is a good way of testing some of that infrastructure. So the opposite approach is to build infrastructure and hope people will use it. And I've seen a lot of organizations do this with reuse and things like, you know, sort of component libraries. We're going to build all these components first, and then we can build some really useful applications on top of them. The reverse idea, which would be much more agile, is actually build some really useful applications and then actually recognize the possibilities for reuse in the code, because you've actually used it. You've probably learned some stuff as well, actually. Now, if we're going to make it reusable, yeah, we've done some stuff, and it's good, but we can improve it like this.
That reminds me of before I joined Microsoft in the late 90s, I worked for an enterprise software vendor, and they had an application that was client-server based, but they wanted to fully embrace, you know, Complus and the Windows DNA model, and they said, we're going to build out a very rich middle-tier object library. So I was the development lead for the business objects team, and we looked across this rich model of entities in the database, and we created a very nice, well-factored library of business objects. C++ was wonderful stuff. And then they had this rogue project off on the side that was going to build a web version. And they went off and built a whole web version and didn't use a single one of our objects. And it drove me crazy because we had built this elaborate business object library. They didn't use it at all. And they got their thing done. In the end, they were very happy with it. And, you know, nobody ever bothered using our objects. It was kind of a crazy waste of time.
It is, and I think this is where you absolutely have to root stuff back to real business value. And it's also real business value in a time scale that works for the business. So if I have to build all these huge horizontal layers of architecture before I can start building business applications, I might be years down the road, and then by the time I get there, I'll decide, actually, technology's changed anyway, and maybe the business has changed as well. So all of that work has been, you know, been absolutely wasted. So this is where it has to be rooted back, and you have to get that much shorter-term delivery, and I think this is one of Agile's other, you know, sort of killer blows. Between starting a project and delivering value is so much shorter. You could do it in 3-4 months. Yeah, so you're prioritizing the value, prioritizing what you're working on. And actually, there was a Standish report stat that said that, you know, pretty much 80% of the software we build is just rarely or never used. I think they might have been thinking about a few Microsoft products at the time, but I won't go there. But, you know, so if you can concentrate on the other 20%, you can do an awful lot less work and deliver an awful lot more value. And so if you can do that up front, you can actually go to release much, much earlier, get some value. But this absolutely relies on you building things in vertical, feature-based approaches as opposed to this horizontal approach. If you built from the ground up, you're not going to be able to go live until you've done all the layers run up to the top.
Okay, so when you go to talk to a business about a project and you say, we're going to do this with an agile methodology, how do they react? Does that make them nervous?
It does sometimes. Funnily enough, actually, for starters, we don't just go in and say, we're going to do this agile. We generally don't actually let on we're doing it agile. We just say, well, these are the ways we're going to work, and we kind of need you involved. And so you have a bit of a conversation about getting them involved. Once they're involved, particularly after the first iteration when they've seen some real code and they suddenly realize that, hey, IT actually delivers something, you get huge buy-in. Sometimes it's actually harder on the IT side because they're so ingrained in their waterfall processes and they kind of trust them. You know, they don't ever actually really work properly, but they've got something, you know, to hide behind. So sometimes it's harder on the IT side. Business actually, when you demonstrate working software and actually want them involved and get them involved, usually are fairly positive about it.
Well, I can imagine how this the IT side may resist this, because it's one of our favorite excuses is to say, well, the business users keep changing their mind and the requirements keep changing. That's why we can't be successful. But that excuse kind of goes away.
It completely goes away with Agile. Agile says, yeah, you're going to change your mind. That's part of the process. Yeah, but what we absolutely then do is make sure we're factoring those changes back to the prioritization of business requirements. We're always doing the most important business requirements. That set of the most important business requirements may change over time. In fact, it will change over time. But by focusing on those priorities, we're always doing the most valuable work. And that's the key difference.
Okay. So if I was an architect saying, okay, I've heard about Agile, but I don't really, haven't ever done it, what should I do to learn about this, or how would I get started?
Okay, so there's quite a few training courses, books, etc. out there. You know, there's a lot of Scrum and Agile books. There's an excellent book by Mary and Tom Poppendick, Lean Software Development, which I would highly recommend anybody reading, from a project manager through to a developer. We've bought those books for every single member of our organization. So there's a lot you can read to start with, but reading courses, etc., can never substitute actually doing it. So one of the things we do is we kind of seed teams. So we help our customers get up to speed on Agile. We'll put some experienced people in, experienced both on the technology and the methodology, and we put them in as part of the team, and basically knowledge transfer on the fly in real project contexts. And once you've actually gone through a number of iterations, you'll see the whole team, you know, have moved an awful long way in terms of their ability to do Agile. One of the other things I would say is be patient, because your first few iterations are not going to be smooth. In fact, actually, yeah, no iterations are ever smooth, because you're always looking at them and improving them. But one of the key things you'll see with an Agile project is you'll start, yeah, the team's evolving, the team are figuring out how they work together, let alone just what they're going to build. But actually, they improve over time. And if you're new to Agile, it does take some time, not only to understand, you know, what you're trying to do, but actually the whole essence of Agile takes a bit of a mind shift if you're used to these, you know, these thoroughly waterfall and rigorous processes. So patience is one of the other virtues. There's a very good blog. One of my colleagues, Simon Evans, has literally just gone through that. He was wasn't sure about this Agile stuff. He's just gone through that process on a .NET 2 project and just blogged about it. So if you look at Simon Evans' blog on blogs at conchango.com, you'll see his journey through that. It makes very interesting reading.
I can imagine that it would be really important to bring in somebody with some experience. You know, if you just said, took a team of people and nobody had ever done this before and said, we're going to do this Agile, we'd probably make a lot of mistakes initially.
They do. And I think that's one of the other areas. You have to be prepared to make mistakes. The architect has to be prepared to make mistakes. Now, they always do, but they tend to kind of hide it quite well, yeah? So, yeah, what I really meant on this architecture diagram was...
That's the essential skill of an architect, to hide the mistakes.
One of the things about Agile is there is nowhere to hide. You make some architectural decisions, you base them on what you know at the time. Later on, you know more, so you will evolve that architecture. So, again, this is something that's quite hard for people to actually say, yeah, okay, we thought this at that stage, we've got some more information now, and now we're going to change it. And I know, you know, project managers, you know, see sort of rework as a complete waste of time. Refactoring? Why? You've already written it. Why do it again?
Yeah.
So there are some mindset things to get across. And I think mindset is the biggest problem.
Well, and you know, that's the thing, is that I think to a lot of non-technical people, they look at building software like you would look at building a building. And so they could imagine, you know, oh, look, the carpenters, they built that room out there, but now they're tearing the walls off and redoing it. Why are they doing that? That would seem like a tremendous waste of time. But software is different.
It is different. And I think this is one of the, going back to the question of, you know, why has Agile become popular? One of the reasons it's become more popular, I think, is because the tool sets, and this is where tools like VSTS are very, very important. The tooling has improved to the point where we can refactor. We've got unit tests and so on in there. Yet we can change things on the fly. And actually, the cost of change has come right down. It's clearly still a cost of change. But actually, one of the problems is that organizations, when they go waterfall, will spend months trying to de-risk the project, yeah, by trying to know everything up front. Actually, in those months when they're trying to de-risk the project, if they just got on with it, they'd find all the problems and mistakes. And actually, they'd come across it, yeah, and they'd have to change the architecture a few times. But actually, what they'd end up with is a far better architecture. It was far better informed, and it's far more malleable for future update and maintenance and change.
And they might have to do that anyway, even
they
with the
have
waterfall.
To do that anyway. So even the best architects with a really good set of requirements, yeah, will put together an architecture vision, and they will make some mistakes or some areas that will have to, you know, drill down in more detail. And also, you know, if you're working with leading-edge technology, so, you know, we've been working on .NET for .NET 2 for quite some time through the betas of it, well, the technology's changed under our feet. Yeah, some of the decisions we made on beta 2, you know, when we get to release candidate, we've had to change things.
Yeah.
So, you know, the technology underpinnings also move around you.
Okay, so one of the key concepts in Agile is this idea of an iteration. What is an iteration?
So an iteration is a time-boxed event, if you like. Variable depends on the agile methodology you're choosing, but anything from a week to about 4 weeks is typical. We use Scrum, and we go for an iteration of 4 weeks. What it is a complete delivery of production quality code. It's a vertical slice of production through the prioritized business features that you need to build. So it's complete in itself. It might only be a small part of the application, but it works, and it's demonstrable to the business. The business can then feedback on it to actually tell you whether it really is what they want, and also to see more ideas for innovation. So an iteration is a very, in Scrum we call them sprints, because you've got 4 weeks, it's not very long, you've got some business features to build, and it keeps the motivation level, the focus level, very, very high. Yeah. But the key thing about this is it's what we call production quality.
So it seems like that would be a crucial thing for the architect to decide what vertical slice are we going to address in this sprint or this iteration. And arranging the sprints in a logical order that makes sense, so that you don't end up with a lot of rework to put them together at the end. That must be a very tricky part to get right.
It is. I mean, again, it's another one of these architectural skills. It's not just an architectural job, though. This in Scrum, the architect will work very closely with the product owner. The product owner is the guy, usually from the business side, who is prioritizing these business requirements to make sure that those are in the right order. We've got the key value stuff right up the front. So the architect's working with the product owner. You might identify that it's a technical dependency that, as far as the product owners are concerned, not that important. That might need to be stepped up. So yeah, there is a trick. There's a skill in making sure that you've got these things aligned in a sensible order.
So for example, the business owner might say, "Oh, I want the new order entry system. That's the most important thing. We have to get that right." The architect says, "Well, yeah, but we have to build the security system first, so before we can build the order entry system."
Okay, so this again is another one of the mindset changes.
Uh-huh.
So the architect, sure, he's taking business features. So the product owner doesn't know perhaps about the security stuff unless it's a non-functional requirement. Yeah, so bank details must be completely secure. Da, da, da. So we have a non-functional requirement. The architect will translate that into the technical underpinnings to support that business requirement.
Yeah.
So that will be part of that business feature, and it will get prioritized with it. So slightly different spin. So what you end up with is a backlog of business features, not technical features, business features that the product owner understands.
Okay.
Yeah, so if we start putting, Atlas on the product backlog, the product owner will go, "Well, I don't know what that is." So I don't know how to prioritize it.
Yeah.
So it has to be at that business level, so the product owner at a business level understands it and can prioritize it. Then the architect's skill is actually taking those, working out the technical underpinnings, working out how much you can do. The team will actually work out how much they can do in that four-week iteration and pick it up from the most top priority backlog items, and they'll pick off just enough that they can build production quality, those features in that sprint.
Okay, so I would imagine that makes the business user very, very comfortable, because then they look at the list of work that needs to be done. They understand every item on the list, at least from the business perspective, and they prioritize them with the team. They say, okay, these 4 weeks, we're going to address the first three items on this list because everybody in the team agrees that's what we can get done. Then they can go and report to their management, hey, at the end of these 4 weeks, you can expect to see something that does this. I think that would be wonderful.
Yeah, and absolutely right, and that's the feedback we get. Yeah, the business actually, there's a customer of ours here I was talking to earlier. They've got their first Agile project going. And the first thing he said, the business love it. Yeah, and this is a big difference for IT. IT have been the bad guys for a while. Yeah, we cost a lot of money and we don't deliver stuff. That's the reputation we have, which is very sad. But one of the things Agile does is it does bring the business back on side. They see us delivering stuff. They're connected. Yeah, they feel like we're there for them, which actually we are.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, thanks so much, Colin, for stopping by today.
Colin Bird from Conchango.
I love that name of that company,
Conchango.
It's kind of cool. It's got a cool sound to it. Yeah, Colin, had some great thoughts there on agile development and architecture together, which a lot of people have said, oh, you know, those things don't go together at all. You know, they just, they can't work together, but they have to. You have to have an idea of the thing you're building. And in fact, I think if you're going to do it in an agile way, you have to have an even stronger idea of what you're building. I don't know if that's even possible, but I think you got the flavor of this. What'd you think? Huh? Send me a note to ron.jacobs@microsoft.com and let me know what you'd like to hear on the show, because I'm working on getting those things together. So we'll see you next time on ArtCast.